You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. Got a lot of great stuff to talk about, man. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast right now. I missed you all last week. I apologize about that, but I had to go see my goddaughter for her second birthday. Yes. Happy second birthday to my goddaughter. It was a great time being able to spend time with her and allow her to enjoy her second birthday, man. I got a chance to actually go to the zoo. Y'all, I was excited, man. I hadn't been to the zoo in God knows how long. I couldn't even tell you the last time I went to the zoo, but I was like a big kid out there, man. Like, it was an awesome time. I really, really enjoyed spending time with her. Let's get into this sports talk, shall we? We got a lot of stuff that's going down right now, man. The March Madness tournament is winding down. We are now down to the Final Four. That's coming up this Saturday. That's right. The Final Four is coming up. It's been quite an interesting tournament. We've had upset after upset. Teams are just continuing to shock the world, as I'll get a little bit more into in just a moment. So let's talk about the Elite Eight first. So I just want to give a little recap of the Elite Eight, and then we'll allow that to lead us into the Final Four. So that'll be a perfect segue into the Final Four matchups that we have upcoming this weekend. So just to recap for the Elite Eight, so we had number 12 Oregon State face off against number 2 seed Houston. Oregon State actually fell to Houston in this one, 67-61. Sophomore guard Marcus Sasser led the way for Houston with 20 points. Their junior guard Quentin Grimes followed that up with 18 points. And their forward Justin Gorham, he had 6 points and 10 rebounds. Now, Oregon State shot 46.8% from the field to Houston's 32%, and they shot 37.5% from the three-point line to Houston's 34.4%. However, the difference in the game, Houston went 66% from the free throw line to Oregon State's 55%, and they out-rebounded Oregon State 41-29. So despite having a better shooting display from the field, the difference, again, that free throw line and being able to out-rebound Oregon State is really what helped Houston get the win in this game, creating opportunities for yourself through second chance points, and then capitalizing on the free throw line. This is going back to what I mentioned before the tournament even started. As we were going into the tournament, this is one of my highlighted important things that I said, that if a team wanted to run the table, if they wanted to get to a Final Four, get to a national championship, you got to be able to capitalize on those free throws is one of those things. And they did just that. Next up, we had number 1 Baylor facing off against the number 3 seed Arkansas Razorbacks. Baylor got the win in this one, 81-72. Maceo Teague led the way with 22 points and 5 rebounds. Jared Butler followed that up with 14 points and 5 assists. Now, both teams did shoot 48% from the field in this one, but Baylor shot 53%. From the three to Arkansas's 27%. So I think that was a major difference in the game. And then they also shot 76% from the line to Arkansas's 73%. Arkansas actually out-rebounded Baylor 34-29. But another difference in this game, which I think that the a huge, huge difference in this game, was the fact that Arkansas had 15 total turnovers, to Baylor's 9. So they didn't help themselves out with those 15 turnovers. Baylor had gotten off to a solid lead in this game, and Arkansas actually battled back to get it within single digits. But again, those turnovers hurt you in any basketball game, and they don't help you later on in the game when you're trying to battle back. You know, you think about all the the points that you give up early on in the game due to turnovers, and in late game turnovers as well is another factor. Moving on to our next matchup, we had number one seed Gonzaga face off against the number six seed USC Trojans. Gonzaga won this pretty handily, very easily, 85-66. This wasn't close. Drew Timmy led the way for Gonzaga, 23 points. Corey Kispert had 18 points and 8 assists. And Jalen Suggs had 18 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists in this matchup. He was really active in this game. Gonzaga shot 50% from the field, 33% from the three-point line, and 70% from the line. And they out-rebounded USC 41-29. So there's no reason for me to even tell you what USC did, because whatever they did, Gonzaga doubled or tripled that in numbers. So this one, again, it was not close. Gonzaga just looked as smooth and poised and like the number one overall seed in the tournament. It was no contest. Moving on, and this was one of the most interesting ones, the most exciting ones that I had an opportunity to watch. And this was the number one seed Michigan faced off against the number 11 seed UCLA. They actually beat Michigan 51-49 in this matchup, so got another upset. Man, UCLA just piling on the upsets. They already upset my Alabama Crimson Tide, you know. I have to come on here and say it because I know people are listening in and they're like, oh, you know, he's not going to talk about the Tide this episode. Yes, we lost. We shot ourselves in the foot, not being able to capitalize on free throws. But again, all credit goes to UCLA for battling and doing their thing. They got a big contributions off the bench. And then Ju Zhang was really leading the way for this team in that game against Alabama. And then he did just help carry over with that energy, feeding off into this game against another team that was said that they couldn't beat them. You know, well, they weren't expected to beat Michigan. But again, in this game, Johnny Ju Zhang, 28 points. He went 11 for 19 from the field. He actually took the most shots on the team. He really put the team on his back. UCLA actually shot 38% from the field, and Michigan shot 39%. And UCLA also shot 23% from the three-point line, and Michigan shot 27%. So not really that great at all from the three-point line in this game. But again, it was really back and forth. I think the largest lead in this game was about 8 points, 8 or 9 points at one point. It just kept going back and forth. UCLA would build a lead. Michigan would battle back, get it within just 3 to 4 points. UCLA would come back and counter that. And to one point, Michigan actually took a 1-point lead in this game. And then they had an opportunity to extend that, but they just could not capitalize on those opportunities, and they could not stop UCLA when they needed to get stops. Michigan did out rebound UCLA 38-28. So you would think that would have better helped them, but no, again, they were not able to capitalize when they had the opportunities, when they were getting those second chance points. A lot of wasted possessions down the stretch in this game, early on in this game, that ultimately became detrimental to the Michigan Wolverines. The difference in this game was UCLA's 85% from the line to Michigan's 54%. So again, the free throws, people, important. Michigan also had 14 turnovers in this matchup to UCLA's 8 turnovers. Again, like I said, Michigan couldn't really get it going. Hunter Dickinson and Franz Wagner, they're two of the best players that they had on the court. They just really couldn't get themselves into a rhythm. Hunter Dickinson only finished with 11 points, and Franz Wagner only had 4 points in this game. So that's not going to help you out at all when you're trying to get to a Final Four and ultimately advance to a national championship game. So those were that was the recap of the Elite Eight. And now we have the Final Four, which will will feature the number one seed Baylor against number two seed Houston, and then we'll have number one seed Gonzaga against the number 11 seed UCLA Bruins. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. We'll get into the Final Four and who I think is going to face off in the national championship, and I'll also give you guys who I think is going to win the national championship this year. But I'm going to make you wait. You know, don't get too excited just yet. I'm going to give you my pick a little later, but let's talk about who the most valuable player in this tournament has been so far. Who has been the most valuable player in March Madness so far? So if you ask me, without a shadow of a doubt, I'm going with Drew Timmy from Gonzaga, the sophomore forward. He's been lights out, man. I mean, what can you really say? You look at him, and at first glance, you don't look at him as one of the guys that you would assume to be athletic, assume to be able to ball like he can ball. But he defies those judgments against his outer appearance. And, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover, especially on a basketball court. Like I said, you look at him and he almost reminds you of like a PE teacher or like that gym teacher from high school that you just like, he's not really athletic. He can't really hurt you in any way. I mean, he'll come out here. He has pretty good size, but he probably won't do too much. And then he goes out there and he just lights you up. Let me just talk about Drew Timmy a little bit and what he's done. So his season average, is 18.7 rebounds and 2 assists. But he's been doing well over his average in regards to contributions for Gonzaga. So let's look at his tournament numbers. So he went 30-13-4 versus number 8 Oklahoma. He shot 75% from the field in their first game and 85% from the free throw line. He went 22-6-4 versus number 5 seed Creighton. He shot 71% from the field. And just this last matchup against number 6 seed USC, he went 23-5-4 and 75% from the line. So again, he has really been capitalizing and balling each and every game. You look at Drew Timmy, he's a tough defender. He crashes the glass. He makes smart basketball decisions. He has the ability to find the basketball. If the basketball is in his vicinity, he's going to get it. He is tenacious and he's gritty and he really grinds to get the basketball. And last but not least, he can single-handedly take over a game by himself. I watched him single-handedly take over that game against USC. You know, even the game against Oklahoma, there was nothing that they could do to stop him, you know, and then he attracts attention. Once he gets going, he starts to attract that attention on the inside. And then that creates other opportunities for your guards to get open shots from the 3-point line, mid range shots as well. So Drew Timmy being the player that he is and being able to attract that attention again, at first glance, you look at him, you're like, you know what, I can handle him. But when you get on the court, it's a whole different story. He has that ability to really take over. So if I had to pick one guy, I would go with him as my MVP for this tournament, the most valuable player to his team. Because without Drew Timmy, I don't know that we're talking about Gonzaga being where they are right now and being undefeated. Without him being the contributor he's been for this team, they wouldn't be where they are. I mean, they could have made a run, but I do not think that Drew Timmy's absence would have gotten them this far. So let's move on and talk NFL. So there's some stuff going down in the NFL right now. We have some news. We're actually going to have a 17-game season, people. So for all my football fans, all my NFL lovers, the owners have officially approved the expansion of a 17-game season, which will begin starting in 2021. This season, 2021, we're going to get 17 games. Now, this is not going to help some teams. So some teams will get an extra away game, and then you'll have the other half of the teams that will get an extra home game for this year. So depending on what happens and what's going on later on down the line in the season in regards to playoff implications, you will have some advantages in certain areas, and especially if the plan is to have full stadiums at full capacity, is what Roger Goodell is saying, that he expects to have full capacity of stadiums this year. I don't know about that. I think that's a little too far stretched with still having the unknown. I know we have the vaccine and everything right now, but to say full capacity, I'm not sure that that's the way to go just yet. Maybe in 2022, full capacity, but I still say limit the capacity. I know they're trying to get the money, and it's all about the revenue and so on and so forth, but if we're talking about safety, you might want to reconsider that. So let's dive into a little bit more about this 17 game scheduling and what it's going to entail, and how it's going to impact the players. So again, the owners approved it. It's going to start this year, 2021. There's actually going to be three preseason games instead of four this year. So the reduction from the four to the three preseason games is because the collective bargaining agreement, or the CBA, only allows 20 total games between regular season and the playoffs. Now, each team will still only get one bye week. And the 17-game schedule will be played over an 18-week span. So you would think with the extra game, oh, teams should get an additional bye week. No, they're going to play the 17-game schedule, like I've already mentioned, over an 18-week span. Each team will still only receive one bye week. And I'm pretty sure the players and the coaches are not very happy about that, which is very understandable, seeing that they extended it an extra game. Now, the players are actually, you know, there's a lot of players that are upset, more players upset than other players in regards to the 17 game expansion. But the reality of this situation is they actually can't fight this anymore. They had that opportunity last year when these conversations started to happen with the CBA and the Players Association. They were going back and forth about what was going to happen, but the players actually already signed off on it last year. If you guys recall, when there was a back and forth about this, they ended up ultimately signing off on this after they took a vote on whether or not to expand. So it had already been put into motion. We knew it was coming. I know players are upset and they're saying it's dumb. And those are the players that, obviously, you know, Alvin Kamara and other players have come out and said, you know, Richard Sherman's always been a vocal player, Cameron Jordan. Those were amongst players that did not vote in favor of obviously having an expanded schedule. And let's talk a little bit more about that. You know, the players who actually opposed the 17-game schedule, they don't like the extra toll that it's going to have on their bodies. And they believe that they should be extracting more concessions from the owners for playing an extra game. So when I say concessions, they're wanting more money. And just to sum that up, they want obviously more money for playing an extra game and putting their bodies to the test. Now, when we talk about playing an extra game, you know, there is a way that these players who don't want to play 17 game schedules, there's a way that they can get out of playing a 17th game. You know, they have injury reports. I'm not saying fake an injury, but if you're not feeling well, you can load manage in a sense during this time. You know, we see that happening in the NBA with load management. Who's to say that a player couldn't sit out with tightness in his back or something like that? There's a way for coaches to manage this for the players if they are if they don't agree with playing the 17 game schedule. And like, and I get it, you know, from a fan perspective, obviously I love the fact that we're going to get an extra game. I love the fact that they're taking away a preseason game. I wish they would take away two preseason games, because it's really the preseason game is good for the rookies, obviously, so don't wipe it all out. So they do need to get their shine and their exposure as well, so let me not say that. But you know, from a fan perspective, obviously excited for an extra game. From a player's perspective, I get it. You know, that extra game, the toll on your body. If you're going to play an extra one, you want the more money. We get it. We get it. But you don't have to play full 17 games is what I'm getting at, people. You do not have to play every game. And I do think, and I could be wrong about this, I do feel like they're still getting paid for every game of the season, even if they don't play 17 games, you still get paid for 17 games. So if you play 16 games and you set out one of those games, you still get paid for it. So there's a win-win situation in this scenario. And let's just dive a little bit deeper. Let's go even deeper about the financial side of this and how it's going to impact the league and the players. So the players are actually going to get more money from this in the long run. So not immediately, but over the next couple of years, in the long run, they're actually going to be receiving more money. How so, you may ask? How is this possible? So the players' share of the league revenue was 47%, right? So last year was 47%. This year is going to be, it's going to rise to 48%. So it actually rose to 48% at the start of the new league year. So once the league goes to the 17 games, there's actually a media kicker, what they call a media kicker, that will apply based off of how much the new TV deals are worth, meaning the players' share of revenue can increase. So just to give you an example, if the new TV deals represent a 60% revenue increase over last year's player share. If the new TV deals represent a 60% revenue increase over last year's, the player share can increase to 48.5%. Now, if there's a 120% increase of the TV deals compared to what last year's was, it will go to 48.8%. So that player share would rise to 48.8%. So there is an opportunity again in the long run for the players. They will be receiving more money. Now, some players who are already under contract will also get more money. The CBA actually states, again, the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, actually states that any player whose base salary is higher than the minimum number for a player of his service time will be eligible to receive an extra game check if these three conditions, right? A, his contract was finalized prior to February 26th of 2020. B, his contract wasn't renegotiated or restructured in any way to add or subtract value to it. And C, he's on the active roster, inactive list, or IR, which is injured reserve, for the 17th game. So again, you listen to that, you see the opportunity for players to make more money. I know that they're not, many of them are not in favor of this expansion at this point in time. But when they see, I'm pretty sure once they see the increase in revenue, the increase in their player share over time, because we know that this the viewership is going to increase with the extra game. And we know the NFL is a business, so they're all about making money. And I think in this sense, they're trying to, you know, get the players to see you will be making more money. Now, if from the player's perspective, again, you always got to look at it from both sides. They're like, you know what? I want my money now. why do I have to wait? Because there's no guarantee that I'm going to be able to play into 2023, 2024, when we'll start seeing this stuff come into fruition, when we start seeing these increase in money. there's no guarantee that I'm still going to be in this league. You know, you got guys like Richard Sherman who are getting older. You know, they're getting to that point where, you know, you're looking towards life after football. So I want my coins now. That's what the players are saying. So, but nevertheless, we're going to get the 17 games regardless. So we'll just continue to watch it and see how everything unfolds. But it is exciting to see again, an extra game, and what that's going to mean for the league. And now I don't know, if ultimately they'll try to, expand to an 18th game. But I'm pretty, that probably wouldn't even be discussed, for, maybe the next, I don't know, six to 8 years. It is weird with it being an odd game schedule because we're so used to it being 16 games. I really wish they would have at least made it an even game schedule, but it's already been tough enough to add one extra game. Couldn't imagine adding two this year, how much uproar you would get from the players. So, but again, that's where we are right now, people. So let's move and jump to the NBA. So the NBA trade deadline is passed. We have some new faces in some new places, people. So I'm just going to mention the trades and or signings that stood out to me the most during the NBA free agency and the trade right before the trade deadline. So, as we all know, the Nets actually added Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge. So, many people look at this and don't really see a great signing with the both of these two gentlemen. But for me, I think that this was solid for them in regards to adding size. I think Blake Griffin still has the ability to ball. He can still give you quality minutes. He can still come off the bench and give you that tough basketball player that we know that he can be. He can defend. I think that he provides some value to a team who did not have size at one point. It was really Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. They didn't, and then they had DeAndre Jordan, but outside of that, there was no size there. So you bring in Blake, you bring in LaMarcus Aldridge, a veteran. I know he's older, and I know he's not going to go out there and give you 20 to 30 or anything like that, but we're talking about depth here, people. We're talking about value being added to your roster, excuse me. And these are the types of things that help you when you're going into the playoffs. We think back to the Lakers run last year. Just think about the depth that they had on that team in regards to the big men. There weren't names that really jumped out at you too much. You know, I mean, with JaVale McGee, you know, Dwight Howard wasn't the Dwight that, you know, we're used to him being from years ago when he would really light it up. But they had that depth, that size on in the paint with Anthony Davis, JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard. It helped them a lot. Now, I'm not trying to compare athletic ability between Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge and DeAndre Jordan, comparing that with those three guys. But what I'm strictly saying is the fact that they have the ability to give you that depth. So don't overlook that, people. Don't overlook the importance of depth when it comes to your roster, because it is important. Now, looking at the next signing, I had the Lakers adding Andre Drummond. So this was actually pretty huge to be able to go out and acquire Andre Drummond, a guy who's still young. I want to say he's 27 years old. You pair him up with Anthony Davis and LeBron. That's going to be a force to be reckoned with. Now, the kicker here is the health issue of all three of these guys being able to be on the court at the same time. Andre Drummond actually is out with a toe injury right now. I know he's only going to be missing about two games, is what they say. He'll be out a couple of games, so he won't be out long. He'll return. But we still have LeBron, who's out at least another 4 weeks. Anthony Davis, who's out at least another 4 weeks as well. So right now it's really just Dennis Schroeder and Kyle Kuzma out there running the show on their own. So what's going to happen when these guys come back. And you think back to that Clippers team last year when you had Paul George, you had Kawhi Leonard, you had some pieces around, you had Lou Will, but those guys never played together more than 11 games. I think that they only played 11 games healthy together last season. And that coming into the bubble was very impactful because none of them were healthy at the same time for an extended amount of time. So how is it going to turn out when Anthony Davis and LeBron ultimately do return to the lineup? Are they going to be able to mesh well? How are things going to work? Because if they can all be healthy at the same time, you know, there's no doubt in any of our minds that they'll be in the Western Conference Finals. Again, it's just contingent upon the health and can these three guys stay healthy? Because again, if they can, we're looking at them in the Western Conference Finals, facing off against whoever. So I do think that that was a great addition for LA. The Heat added Victor Oladipo. So this was a huge addition for Miami, especially since you pair him up with a Jimmy McBuckets, Tyler Herro, and you get Bam Adebayo. You kept all three of those guys. You throw in Victor Oladipo. Man, now this offense got even more electrifying than what it was last year, and we know once they got it rolling last year what they were able to do. And now you add a guy in Victor Oladipo who has he has the whole package, man. I mean, defensively and offensively, Victor Oladipo can do it all. You know, he has a good mid range game. He can shoot the basketball. He is a guy that you want on your roster, and the Heat did a great job of being able to add him. And I think that that's going to really help them in the East as they make a run going forward. The Nuggets added Aaron Gordon, so he's going to be joining Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Michael Porter Jr. I think that this is another great addition in being able to acquire Aaron Gordon, a guy who can jump out the gym, a guy we've seen him in the dunk contest, dunking lights out, and he got robbed. He did get robbed that other year, but Aaron Gordon, solid pickup, a great pickup for the Denver Nuggets. And that's going to really help them as they fight in a tough Western Conference. The Sixers added veteran George Hill. So I think that was pretty solid. George Hill can still give you some value, valuable minutes. He's experienced and he helps from a depth perspective. The Chicago Bulls, my Chicago Bulls, added Nikola Vujovic. I think that was a good aggressive move to be able to go get a guy who can score like he could score. That adds size in the paint for you, something that the Bulls were lacking. So you pair him up with Lauri Markkanen, and you got Patrick Williams, a guy, the young forward who's you know, he's a rookie, he's coming along really well, but again, that veteran presence is what you want, and a guy who's in Nikola who can take over in the paint, and he can get those valuable buckets and rebounds for you. And then last but not least, the Clippers actually added Rajon Rondo, and they're going to lose Lou Will to the Atlanta Hawks. So Lemon Pepper Lou is coming to Atlanta, people. Lemon Pepper Lou. And you know what? Lou Williams or Lemon Pepper Lou, if you're listening to this podcast right now, if you tune in, if you catch this on my page, I feel like since you're coming to Atlanta, since you'll be here in Atlanta, I feel like we all need free lemon pepper wings. You know, I mean, I don't see what's wrong in that. All the residents of Atlanta, let's get us some free lemon pepper wings, man. I mean, I know you have some wings named after you. I heard about you. You have some wings named after you, so let us get some. You know, I'll take a nice 10-piece combo with some fries. You know what I mean? I would love that. You know, wings. I can eat wings all day. So again, Lemon Pepper Lou, my brother, if you listening, I would love a 10-piece combo. All right? If y'all look, listen, whoever, matter of fact, my listeners right now, forward this part of the podcast. If you have to screen record it just so you can catch my audio, do what you have to do. Everybody send it to his social media, to his Instagram, to his Twitter. Send it to his DMs. Mention him in it. Tell him we want some wings, y'all. All flats, flats and drums. It doesn't matter. Let us get those wings. All right, y'all, I'm going to stop playing. I'm going to stop. I got myself hungry just talking about wings. And now I'm probably going to go get me some wings tomorrow. Yeah, that's going to happen. I'm going to get some wings. Yeah. Okay. Back on track. So, all right, let's round everything up, man, and talk Final Four, and let's talk national championships, man. I told y'all I was going to circle back to this. I made you wait a while. I appreciate you sticking with me. So let's talk about it. So again, we got the Final Four kicking off tomorrow, Saturday. We got the number one seed Baylor Bears going up against the number two seed Houston. They're going to be tipping off at 5:14 p.m. And then after that, at the night primetime game will be number one seed Gonzaga versus the number 11 seed UCLA Bruins, tipping off at 8:34 p.m. So, looking at both of these matchups, my national championship game prediction is going to be the number one seed Gonzaga Bulldogs versus the number one seed Baylor Bears. I think that that's what we are going to see for our national championship. We're going to get Drew Timmy, Corey Kispert, and Jalen Suggs matched up against Macy O'Teague, Jared Butler, and Davion Mitchell from Butler. It's going to be a great game. I think that, and let's remember, these two teams were actually supposed to play each other early on this year. I want to say it was week four, the fourth game of the year, but that game actually ultimately got canceled due to COVID, so it did not happen. So I think with that being said, we're going to get that matchup that we didn't get to see versus the two best teams in college basketball that have been consistent. Well, Baylor has been more inconsistent. Gonzaga has shown to be the best team in basketball. Baylor has had their ups and their downs, but nevertheless, they're here, and that's what counts, and that's what matters. I think we'll see both of those teams match up. And for my national championship winner, I'm going to go with the Gonzaga Bulldogs to win the national championship game this year. So that game is going to be coming on next Monday. So I won't be able to cover that. So that's why I gave y'all my picks right now. So, hey, that's what we got, man. So, hey, tune in, lock in. The Final Four is approaching. National Championship is approaching, man. Hey, and that's all I have for y'all, man. I appreciate everybody for joining in, rocking with me, listening to the podcast. As always, I'll be back the same time, same place next week for some more healthy sports talk. Peace, blessings.